going to be doing something a little bit different today, all right, than the normal procedure. And the reason is, most of you have not been with me from the beginning of Genesis chapter 1, verse 1, and the first verse, first word, right? All of you have come and gone, and some of you are brand new. But where we're going to be heading into the book of Genesis next week, it's going to be the book of Joshua, if I could use that word, or Joseph, rather. And meaning the story of life and story of Joseph, which is very, very important in the book of Genesis. It covers a tremendous amount of the book of Genesis. Now, in order for us to have a background, some of you have not been with me from the beginning, so I'm not going to go very, very beginning, but I have a little rundown of a few things that we can have a picture. The object which I want to try to accomplish today is that you could have a view of where God has involved himself in the lives of mankind and almost every place that we see written in the book of Genesis. And sometimes we may not agree with God, and sometimes we must just discipline ourselves and say, okay, maybe I don't understand what you're doing, but don't disagree with him. Just kind of say, okay, I don't have the picture, I can't get to see it quite right, but don't accuse the people that he is leading and directing, and assume that the people that he's leading and directing have gone contrary to the will of God. All have fallen short of the glory of God, including the big names that are in the Bible, really big names. Noah fell short, Shem fell short, Shem fell short, Adam fell short, Eve fell short. How many of them didn't fall short of the glory of God? I mean, it's a really huge, huge number. And basically, it's all mankind. So, I'm just going to have a real brief rundown, or a synopsis, I should say, of where basically about the time of the changing of the languages. Because that's where, soon after the flood, things began to change, and God, again, began to make a major change in the history of mankind. Prior to that, of course, it was the flood. Alright, so basically Genesis, you don't have to go to these books, you might want to just take your notes down there. Genesis chapter 11, and I'm just going to read a little bit here, starting verse 1. And the whole earth was of one language and one speech. And it came to pass that as they sojourned from the east, that they found a plain in the land of Shinar. That means the country of two rivers. That's what that word Shinar means. And they dwelt there. As we see in this particular chapter, we have a beginning of a Nimrod. We won't have to go there. Remember Nimrod? He had four kingdoms, four powers, four military arms. And he began to take over and dominate the society. And of course, you know all about Babylon. And along comes God. And he says now in verse 3, he says, let's go down and take a look at what's going on down here. I mean, verse 3, rather, the people said, let's go down, let's make bricks. Now let's make an image, let's make a stone, and let's make a build tower. By the way, tower in Hebrew is migdel. It's from the word large, gadol. You heard the word gadol? That's from the basic key word of it. It means it was very large, very big, and massive, and very, very big. And God came down and said, what's going on? You know, well, he knew what was going on. But what I'm trying to say is here that sometimes we as human beings, we need to be able to recognize that when we are interrupting, shall we say, what the Creator has in mind, he comes down and he had a secret weapon. Do you remember what the secret weapon was? Changing the languages. And that's it. All their power just distinguished down to nothing. And they couldn't even join together in battle. What's interesting here, I want to backtrap in verse 3, 2 rather here of this 11th chapter. And he says, and they said, let us go and build a city and a tower whose top is unto heaven. Let us make a name for ourselves. Lest we be scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth. Now, why were they concerned about being scattered abroad upon the face of the whole earth? What happened prior to the flood? They were scattered all over on the face of the earth. They didn't stay in one cluster or one spot. They actually moved out And the world was shaped quite radically different than we see and notice the world as we see it today. The result of what we see in the world today is the result of the flood. We are still receiving the impact of the flood. But see, in our world, we think, oh no, it's ancient days ago. Who cares about that? But look around about you and see how the world is slowly decaying. I should say rapidly now, decaying. As the Messiah had said, in the latter days, these things are going to take place. Because of the destruction of the flood, in one true sense, has not yet been finished. And it will complete itself.
Why it says the whole earth groans, is that related
to
that?
Yes, in Romans, that's correct. All of creation, the whole earth is groaning and moaning, waiting for the sons of God to take over. So you have a job to do in the future, by the way. And it's not going to be a piece of cake. It's going to be work. A lot of work. And you're going to be, your hands will be up to mud, I guess you might say. You'll be actually building and shaping and altering the face of the entire world. It has, as according to how God has in mind to do so. Let's jump back. Now, in the 11th chapter, it had to do with Abram. Remember who's Abram? What does Abram mean? The exalted father. Not father, the exalted father. He became exalted because of what Elohim had said he was going to do with him. And therefore he became exalted. He wasn't born with the name exalted father. He became the exalted father. And have we gone through many times in the scriptures, we see a person's name. It's not the name they were born with. It's their who they did, who they are, and how they acted, and how they lived. And we went through several names, remember? And the names identify what the person did for a living. You know? What's the name of Egypt? Mizraim means? The embanker, the one who actually built banks along the Nile River. And those banks are still there. And so his name, technically speaking, is the embanker. He was an engineer, a civil engineer. But his criteria was around flood areas. So he stopped the flooding and he designed all the embankments along that canal, along the Egyptian river. And that's why they got that name down there. It wasn't just because he had to be born that way. That's what he did. Okay, why did Shem have his name? Because it has this direct association with the creator of heaven and earth. What was Seth's name? What was Seth's name? You remember? The one that replaces, the replacement. It's a really odd name to call a son. High replacement. No. He actually did. Now, who did he replace? Abel. What's name Abel mean? Vain, empty, void. His life was completely wiped out. It ceased to exist. Therefore, he became one that was not. He has no family, no generation, nothing coming from him. And so, and also, the Bible, that he was a righteous one. So, Seth took over. That's what Eve said. The words came out of Eve's mouth. So this is the one that will take the place of Adam. The one that has been made void was killed. He was killed. And the void was emptied. Emptiness was there. Yes.
Oh, gosh. some of the people in the Bible were named at birth,
Very few are named at birth. Very few are named at birth.
So Abel, when he was born, he wasn't named Abel. He was named something else.
So now what happened to Abel? Happened to Abel, he disappeared. He became void. That's what that word means. Look it up. Research it. You'll find it. Very fascinating. The person became non-existent. He was the first one that was murdered. What would you call someone who is deceased? He's the deceased one. What's his name? I don't remember his name. His name is deceased. He was killed. He's the first one being killed. And so that name, Abel, means the vain one, not meaning vain as we think in English terminology of vanity. foolishness and idiocy? No, it meant there's nothing there. He ceased to be. All right, I'll understand that a little bit. But anyway, let's go on here. And God's called Abram and told him to go to his land. He says, I'm going to make you a great nation, and so on and so forth. And in all the earth you shall be blessed. But there's a word I want to clarify. And I will bless them that bless you, and curse them that, in Hebrew it says, esteem you less. And I, and then in each of all the families of the earth. So if you want to curse Abraham, and you don't do that, well, the Hebrew says, if you consider him unimportant in the history of mankind, God's going to put a curse on you. Now, we don't like curses. Do we like curses? No, we're not going to do everything you can to avoid that. So that's why Abraham is so well pronounced from the very beginning all the way to the final end of the Bible. His name is very prominent and very important. And, of course, his name was changed to Abraham, right? The exalted father of many. So he should be the one that's elevated in your world. And what does the Apostle Paul call him? He says if we have the faith that Abraham has, then we are the children of Abraham. Children of the exalted one. Okay? And Abraham was exalted by the power of God. So it's a real quick thing. Another part of his life was that when he went to the land of Canaan, we know a little bit about him. We're real short here. They know he took Lot with him when he left the land. And it says, Abraham dwelt, this is the 13th chapter, verse 12. Abraham dwelt in the land of Canaan. Lot dwelt in the city of the plains. Now see, where are the plains? Remember where they were? Sodom and Gomorrah. It was not like we see it today. It was a plain, lush land, beautiful land, gorgeous. It's the best of all. And what we look at now, that southern part of Israel, we say, who wants to live there? But as a result of what God did to Sodom and Gomorrah and the other five cities, destroyed the plains, and they ceased to be that anymore. Right? It became because of what? The act of nature, the act of evolutionary change, the act of the process of the world turning, and it is a drought, no drought, rain, or storms, unknowns. That Mother Nature took over? No, it's the creator of heaven and earth.
I just had a thought on Sodom and Gomorrah and the whole plain, how it was so proud and wicked that actually it's the lowest place on earth now. I think of the scripture, if you're proud, you know, you will be humbled by God.
Nothing's growing, it's going to decompose when the wind comes, and it's going to dry it all up, and away comes the soil. Nothing can replace it's there. There's a History Channel that has a thing on our plains, of our western plains, how it became absolutely wasteless because of how it was agriculture and how it was put together, and the big storms came in and wiped out everything in the plains. But anyway, I want to tell you, to make this statement that we need to be aware of that, because I have a point here to bring up. But we know that he went and he killed the people of Sodom and Gomorrah and the other four cities. He told the five cities, is that right? If I remember correctly? She looked it up one time, I can't remember. He told the five cities. And then what happened? Okay. I want to read a word here. Genesis 14th chapter, verse 13. And there came one that had escaped and told Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt in the plains. Now, what is Hebrew? First person ever known to be called that. What does Hebrew mean? Sorry, what? Crossed over. Crossed over from what? Yeah, the one that's from beyond, and it comes from the basic verb that means, where am I at? The opposite side or the other side of the river. That's why he was called that. And because where did he come from? The other side of the river. What river? Euphrates River. That's where God called him from, right? Told about, he crossed over the Euphrates River. And that's how he got his name, as known as the one who crossed over, or the one that came from beyond, from another place.
Abraham didn't look like a Canaanite. I don't know what Canaanites looked like, but they recognized and realized he was different than anybody else. And Lot was different than anybody else, too. Remember that city there? They knew that Lot was of a different origin, not origin of the theory of evolution, excuse me, but of a different line. This had to be the line of Shem and not the line of Canaan. All right. And of course, God came down and Melchizedek, king of Salem, or Melchizedek, Melech Shalom. This individual came and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed Abraham with what? Really odd blessing, isn't it? Why bread and why wine? What do you think God had in mind? He told him, all the world will be blessed. How? Through the bread and the wine. The bread represents life, and the wine represents life. Two different kinds of lives, right? One of the flesh and one of the spirit. And why would we take the kadosh? Why I say what I say? Yes.
So it has nothing to do with the bread meaning the word and the wine meaning the ruach or spirit?
No, wine does not represent the ruach at all. Wine represents life. Okay, that's a little bit different in what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, but what does that wine represent? The life, because when the Messiah said what? This is my life. Therefore, drink it. Because the life is in the blood. It's a real truth. It's not a figment of anybody's imagination. And a lot of people think that blood that is the blood is not the life of the creature. That blood is not you. You don't have any blood. Your blood is not your life. Well, take away it. Remove your blood. What do you got? You got death. All right, there's nothing there. But something had to happen prior to the blood. The body had to be beaten to pieces. Now, do you think Abraham understood that? I think Abraham knew more than you can imagine, than I can imagine. And we'll get to this point for a moment. Abraham was one that God says, he is my friend. I will tell him what's going on.
Does it say in the Brit Hadashah that Abraham looked forward to Yeshua's
day? Yes. He looked forward to this thing. And so we have to kind of realize that we are the children of the Exalted One. If we're not the children of the Exalted One, we're the children of the abased ones. You don't want to be a child of an abased one, do you? No, you don't want to be that one at all. You don't want to be the one he has to curse. You don't want to be the one he blesses. All right. And then there was a vision he had. Remember the vision that Abraham had? What does vision mean? You see, and you understand. Oh, that's what it's all about. And so when Abraham was given the vision, he saw what was going to happen. What did he see? Well, he separated the animals up, except the two birds. He separated them. And there was, quote, a fire that went down through the middle of it, right? I'm not going to try to explain that because I don't have time for that. But I want you to understand something. What did Abraham try to chase away?
Birds.
What kind of birds?
Vulcan.
What kind of Vulcan? All right, now you have to get into Hebrew here because this has to do, this is why Abraham knew who and what that these two Vulcans represented. All right, because in Egypt, they worshipped the hawk. They had the helmet, and it's considered one of their gods. That meant the one that's going to eat up and gobble up your descendants. And it happened. And nothing Abraham could do about it. Now, is God involved? Is God running the show? Was Abraham upright? Was he just? Was he holy? Yes, he was holy. And was he good? However, why did God do that to his kids?
Ways are above our ways.
And what?
His ways are above our ways.
Let me ask you people some questions. When times are really, really good, do you ever think about buckling under, but when times are tough, what do? Two things you're going to do. You're either going to buckle under and do what you need to do, or you're going to go after your neighbor and kill them and get what they get. Get what they have. You're going to go against your friend. You're going to go against your mom. You're going to go against your father. You're going to go in anger against them. That's what you do. When this necessity comes down, necessity, we think of number one. Me, you know, that's what we do in the world. Now, so be known. And that's the truth of the whole matter of world, okay? We are created in that image. We're created in God. God created us in, what does it say in Romans? He created us, what? He created us in vain. All right. What else did he create us in? Subject to what?
Ability.
Hope. Every one of us are hoping for something. You know each one of us are hoping for? What? Life. Out of this fleshly world. This world is a really tough world to live in, isn't it? And then God's wisdom says, you're going to be here, and I'm not going to take you off this physical earth. I'm not going to remove you from the toils and the promise and the difficulties on this earth at all. You're going to live your life from the time you're born to the time you're dead. I am not going to move you. There is no deliverance from you. No one's going to come off and deliver you from anything. You're going to live here and you're going to die here. Is that good news? No, it's not good news. But there is hope. What is the hope? That the Spirit of the living God will raise you up from this corrupted world. Your corruption means your body is decaying in Greek. Means you are getting old. You can't stop it. The minute you were born, you were in the process of decaying. You think you're in the process of growing. You're in the process of decaying. You just didn't know it yet, right? It's real simple, though, right? To understand that, right? And then we had this story about and then Sarai didn't have a child, right? Now she did something. What'd she do? What'd she do? Sarah? Sarai. What did Sarai do? And then what did she do after it happened? She said, my fault's going to be upon you, Abram. And guess what? Abram, got some trouble, didn't he? And then, of course, he had to get rid of Hagar as the time went by. But I want to go to the 17th chapter, verse 1. It's very, very important. I'm going very rapidly to pick up, because I want to get to... Abraham's probably one of the most important ones that we need to focus in on here for a moment. And he says, Abraham, with 99 years old, and Yahuwah appeared to Abram and said to him, I am El Shaddai, walk before me and be blameless. Ani El Shaddai. What does Shaddai mean? A consummate verb. Consummate verb. And listen, that world was not far removed from we think as we look at the world, so far removed from the destruction of the flood. To us, we don't look at God in that view. But God identified himself in that view to Abraham. And it means to do violent, to dispose, to devastate, to ruin, to spoil. Why do you want Abraham to know that? Why would the Creator of heaven and earth want Abraham to know that's who he is? No consequence. What?
The destruction is... You are a ninja. The destruction was a consequence of the faithless people that came before him.
So what does that tell you about God, though?
Well, that...
Is he capable of doing it today. Book of Revelation says yes. You remember the seals, each one? It's handed from the El Shaddai unto his son. Each one of those seals are in the power and authority and rule and jurisdiction of the Lamb. Every seal is pulled off is by the power and the authority and the jurisdiction of the Lamb. It's not by consequences of human beings doing stupid things and the consequences of atomic bombs. It's the actions of the Creator of heaven and earth saying, I am going to come and vengeance are mine. And we have to accept that part about God. Because that's what the Revelation is all about, right? Read it all the way to the end. It is a very destructive Creator who's going to bring through tremendous amount of destruction. Do you think another flood's going to come? I'll tell you this one. This one's going to destroy this world. Completely. All right, unlike the flood that was, someone came out of it in the flesh and we continued on. When this one's finished, it's finished. And may you be in the one that is to come. All right? All right.
Hallelujah.
All right. Now I went ahead real quickly. We talked about Sodom and Gomorrah. I want to go there. Okay. Now we go to the 22nd chapter of Genesis. What was the 22nd chapter of Genesis about? That's what? It's about Isaac. It's about Isaac. All right. Now all these events are picturing something, not only the actions of God and what He wants done, but when Abraham was instituting these ones, each and every one of them, it reveals something unto us today. What does it reveal unto us today? The same thing it revealed unto Abraham. What was Abraham revealed? All the world we blessed through Isaac. He believed that. And we have that in the book of Hebrews. It says, he knew that God, he resurrected him from the dead. He fulfilled his promise no matter what. Pretty powerful faith, isn't it? Now, anybody else has ever done that ever since? They don't have God's. God is a friend of Abraham. Abraham was considered God's friend. No one else. No one else gets that title. No one else on the face of the earth gets the title saying, Noah was Abraham's. No, he doesn't get that. I mean, Noah was God's friend. No one doesn't. What about Daniel? No, he doesn't get that title. What about Isaac? No, he didn't get that title. What about Jacob? No, he didn't get that title. Who got the title? Only one person. Now, when you have a friend, what do you do when you have a friend? You tell them exactly what you're doing to do. You tell them exactly what you're going to do. And so he did. All right. Anyway, he went on this mountain and he had to go. Very important verse 2. Here it is. He said, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go into the land of Moriah and offer him there as a whole offering on one of the mountains which I shall tell you. Very important phrase, he said this. All right, so what he got there, of course, God substituted, quote, substituted. We're going to go to verse 14 here. It's a real bad translation of most of your translations. I'm going to be careful what I'm saying here, but you've got to understand what it says in Hebrew. In the 14th verse, it says, and Abraham called the name of the place, and this is the Old English, the Lord will provide. And it says to this day, it says the mount, and the mountain of Yahweh shall be provided. That's not what it says in Hebrew. It says Yahweh sees. That's all it says. Plain, simple. Yahweh sees. What did Yahweh see? What was he seeing? Yeah. That's what he was seeing. He saw. So it wasn't provided. We have this old English word that comes through. We think, oh, he makes substitutions. He makes provisions. He provided for the lamb. He provided, the exact word, the lamb. Actually, technically speaking, it was a goat. And it was always in the very beginning that word, it says lamb. He says, he provided a lamb. It says he provided a goat.
We won't have to go there to prove that. But why a goat? What's a goat represent? Sin offering. All right. Well, again, we haven't got the book of Leviticus yet, but every time when there's a goat, all the holidays and sin offerings, always the goat. Always the goat. Always the goat. Always the goat. Day of Atonement. Goat, goat, goat. Always a goat. All right. Oh.
It says ram in my Bible. The
right.
Hebrew.
Well, I mean, it's a species. It's not a lamb.
I mean, it's not a little lamb. It's an adult ram.
Right. Yeah.
Male animal.
What I'm saying that some translation has it as a lamb, and it's not a lamb. It's definitely not a lamb. What I'm trying to tell you. It's not a lamb. It's of the goat family or the ram family. All right. What was the name of the mountain? What is that? What happened to that mountain? What took place many years later? What did Solomon build on it? Okay, he built the what? Temple. Temple was built at the very same exact mountain. That's why it's so important. All right. Now we have the story of Rebecca. Really, really important that we find out. Well, Rebecca, who's Rebecca? Isaac's wife. What was the problem with Isaac when he was getting old? He couldn't see. Now, what's that picture? A veil over Isaac's eyes. So he could not see what was going on. What did God have in mind? Genesis 25, verse 23. And I've said this before, and I'm going to repeat myself again. It's a very, very important part of Scripture. It's not written good in English. And Yahuwah said unto her, two nations in thy womb, two manners of two gatherings of people shall be separated from your bowels. One gatherings of people shall be stronger than the other gatherings of people. And the stronger gatherings of the people that are greater will serve the lesser gatherings of the people. Of course, we know that's Isaac and Esau and Jacob. Huh, simple answer, right? Now, prophetically, who is bigger? In reality, walking on this earth, who has more militaries or more human beings on their side? Esau has a lot more, outnumbers those of Jacob. By not a few million, but in the billions. All right. It's real today, and it's true today, and though we may not want to look at it, it is true. The house of Israel. Now look at the nation of Israel. Tiny little country over here. And you got this massive mount of the gatherings of the peoples of Esau outnumber significantly the gatherings of people in the nation of Israel today. Just take it on a surface flesh level. How many nations of the world are gathering around Israel? We might say, oh, America, yeah, what's 200, 250, 300 million people, 300 million, compared to 3 billion? I mean, is it outnumbered? Or is it outnumbered? The gatherings of people is very important, yes.
30 to 40% of the people in Israel are Arabs.
So you just look at this thing and you're saying, wow. Is prophecy telling us a lie, or is God really telling us the truth? All right. Now on to Genesis 29. You know, this is very interesting. I won't go through it every detail, but if you have time, look at Genesis 29 and start in verse 31 and the names of the sons of Israel. And remember why they were named. They weren't named because that was the name of who they became, but the name, it's one of the unusual places, of the women naming their son in retaliation against the other woman. And you go through the pattern, you see the same thing with
the maids, the mother, the Rebecca. I mean, Laura, Rachel, and yes, and their maids named them in retaliation to the other one. But that's not the nature of the people. What happened later when Shechem came on the scene? Oh, what did Levi do and what did Simeon do? They wiped out the people. Because that is unacceptable. And, you know, it says in the next chapter there, we don't have to go there, that, that Jacob, you know, was afraid and scared. And he fled. Remember, I told you, Jacob was not a brave man. He fled from his brother, and he fled from his father-in-law, and then he fled from his brother again, and then he fled from Shechem, the already dead people. He fled from the dead people. He was not a brave man. He's not a big man up there like Abraham was, who didn't flee. Abraham was the only one of the three that went to war. That tells you what kind of character and nature that Abraham was. He's willing to go to war. All right, so I want to try to wrap this up, because this is just a synopsis of many things that have happened, okay? And, you know, he said about, you know, I mentioned this last week, that about when Jacob and, you know, his did these things for the rods, the three sticks peeled off the bark, and his group grew out. And we sometimes look at him as being conniving, underhanded, a liar, and a thief, and a robber. But when you read what it says, he says, God sent me a dream. This is what it said. God sent me a dream. He told his daughter, wives this. He says, and he said, an angel, verse 11 of chapter 31. And the angel of Elohim spoke to him in a dream, saying, and Jacob said, here I am. And he says, lift up your eyes and see. Ah. Now what does that mean? Okay, I'm seeing. I'm down here. I'm seeing. No. Lift up. Wake up. See what's going on. This is what's going to happen to you, Jacob. This is what's going to happen to you, Jacob. The rams that leap upon the cattle, rings and rings ragged, sprinkled and grisly. I have seen all that Laban has done to you. This is God's quote, retaliation. Not on how clever Jacob was, but against Laban. And he goes on. And he says, I am Elohim of Bethel. That's where he first came from. When thou hast anointed the pillar, thou hast bowed a vow to me and raised thee up. It is a dream, and that was. The dream is telling when he lifted up his eyes and saw, what was he seeing? Oh, this is what God wants me to do. I will just take these rods. Because people try to do the very same thing. It doesn't work. I'm going to take these rods. So he had faith. Has no scientific proof that it ever works. But he believed. And he took those rods. Exactly as the dream told him to do so. So he said, this is how Elohim is going to increase your sheep. All you have to do, Jacob, cut some bark off. Three different kind of trees, lay them there, and I'm going to have them reproduce for you. No one's going to have an answer how it's done. You know, it's like, stand back, you people of Israel. Let's see what I'm going to do. Up comes the water, parted, they walk into dry land. You know, stupid scientists today, I'm calling them stupid scientists, not the true scientists, but stupid scientists, have all these natural nature doing these things, and God had nothing to do with it. I'll tell you, God is very powerful. And when he told Abraham, I'm El Shaddai, he gave Abraham tremendous amount of faith.
You will do what you said. You will curse anyone who curses me. I believe you. And so he gave. He said, Abraham, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, Abraham. Don't be afraid. I am Mogan. You know what Mogan is? The shield. You know what we call it today? The Star of David. But technically, it's the Star of Abraham. All right, because that's where it began. Wait a minute. No. No, yes, it does. It began right there with Abraham. You can call anything you want, but whether six-pointed, we want, don't worry about the pig. Just talk about God said, I am your shield, I am your protector, I will provide for you. Don't be afraid. Of course, it says the same thing to others too. Okay, I'm almost finished here. No, I don't want to do that one. Oh, I got to talk about one more thing. You know, sometimes, remember when Jacob had a fight? You know, he sent all his people across, but he had to stay back. Had a fight. It's very important to pay attention. This is my thinking, okay? Paying very close attention to what it says. That's why it says what it says. Now, the Old English has a better way of talking about it than anything else. And Jacob sent the messengers before him to Esau, his brother, and to the land of Seir in the country of Edom. And Jacob was left alone, and there wrestled with a man with him until the breaking of the day. Very important. No, he had to wrestle, but the person was not to continue wrestling with Jacob at the breaking of the day. His commander told him, don't fight in the daytime. Fight Jacob in Hoshach. Fight him in darkness. Can you relate to that? Listen, what does the Messiah say? I come as a thief in the daylight. He comes in a thief as a night or in Hoshach, catching you completely off guard. Now, if we are wrestling, and we do wrestle with God, that's what it says, right? We are the ones that challenge God in our daily way of life. We challenge Him whether or not He really and truly is doing what He says He's going to do. And a lot of us probably put Him to the test. Be careful. He only allows 10. Anyway, and you go on this point, and you say, I wonder whether or not this is what God wants me to do. And you kind of know inside it really is, but you don't do it. You know, you're fighting. You're resisting. And, you know, unlike Jacob, who just walked away with a bum leg, all right, some of us may lose something more serious. What man in history lost something more serious when he challenged God? I'll give you a hint. He's a man named David. What did he lose? The death of his baby. God took the baby. He had killed the baby. Wow! Would you like to have that as a loss in your world? God doesn't kill babies. But what did he do before the flood? Did he kill babies during the flood? Oh, yes, he did. Killed them all. Did he kill any woman that's pregnant? Yes, killed them all. Kill a woman that just had a baby? Yes, kill them all. Think God's a killer? But he says, I destroy. And there's a reason behind it. Yes.
Commandment to the Israelites when they destroyed the nations that they dispossessed was to kill everyone.
Right.
As well.
We have this thing, oh, but God can resurrect them. Of course, He can resurrect them. But we have to see the Bible tells us about the wrath of God. The Old Testament, quote, tells us about the wrath of God, especially the book of Genesis. All right? Then we go in the book of Revelations. And what does it tell you there? The wrath of God, when finally the last bowl is poured out, the wrath of God is finished. Not the wrath of you, not the wrath of me, not the wrath of the devil, not the wrath of Satan, not the wrath of the demons, not the wrath of anybody, but the wrath of the Creator of heaven and earth. Now, why should we stand in awe? Should we stand in awe? Yeah, we should stand in awe. We should be. Yeah.
So I'm just telling you these things that we have to keep in mind, because as we go farther into the picture, as we go into now, next week we'll be going on Joseph. That's the beginning of the story of Joseph. Now you'll see a pattern change. Not right away, but you're going to see a pattern change. And I want you to pay attention very closely, because every time someone does something, God has an option to either deliver you out of it or keep you in it. Right? It depends upon what you're going to do, not what He's going to do. Every one of us need to look at the men and the women that have been there and say, wow, did God deliver Abraham out of trouble? Yes. Did He bring Isaac out of trouble? Yes. And when Isaac did what he did and found out what was really going on, it said he was terrified of God, frightened of God, because Isaac, tried to do a maneuver that was contrary to what Rebecca told him. Bad news. You know? Don't walk that way. As I told people, when God talks to a woman in the Bible, you better pay close attention. Very seldom I've seen it reversed. I mean, it's pretty powerful. All right. Well, I guess that's the end of that part. And so Jacob, you know, that Rachel died, but there's a place. Now, in this chapter 35, there's an opening statement, which we don't have to go there, but it's God told Jacob, I want you to be fruitful and multiply. Wait a minute. I got 11 sons already and a daughter. What more do I have to have? Well, I guess I got to have one more. Along comes Benomi, son of my sorrow. Oh, got one. And then she died. And you know, another maid died. And a very important maid died. Okay, she was basically the midwife of delivering most of Leah's children. And it is now, as he traveled, he came to a place on the way to, it's called Ephrat. Now, Ephrat means be fruitful and multiply. What was the name of that place? Came later known as what? Bethlehem, the house of bread. Wow. Where was Messiah born? In Bethlehem, the house of bread. And what is he called? The bread of life. All right. So there's a physical picture here, there's also a spiritual picture here. Everything we see, I haven't gone through detail, but you can go back to the very beginning with Adam and Eve, and everything aims, and all the lines of Seth aims toward one thing. Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and then on to Judah, all the way through David, all the way, tells you one thing. He's aiming at the core of his mark. Okay, I'll explain one more thing about Hebrew. It's Aleph Tov. Aleph is the beginning, and Tov was the last. In Hebrew, Tov was called the mark. He begins here. You know where he's going? Through every single letter in detail until he hits the mark. That's where that play on words is all about. And we say, oh, it's the cross. Well, yes, I understand that. But at the same time, he hit the mark. Now life will begin for us. When he hit the mark, life now is for us. Then next week, we're going to go into Joseph.